Join me in Mark chapter 9, verse 2. Before we get to the text, I want to ask you to do something for me. Actually, it's this side of the church I want to ask you to do something for me. As I look out, this side is almost full. This side's kind of empty. So those of you on this side, take a look around, and all the people who typically sit near you that's not here this morning, even though they might be on vacation or whatever, call them and tell them you missed them. Because we do. Those of you seated on this side, look around you, and when you leave today, find someone who's seated near you and say, thank you, it's good to see you this morning. Y'all got some work to do. It's like this, I'm sitting up here going. But thank you all so very much for being here. It's a wonderful pleasure and joy to be able to have a house of the Lord such as this to come to each and every Sunday and share such wonderful time together. Thank you all. Mark chapter 9, verse 2. And I will read through verse 29. After 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him and led them up a high mountain where they were all alone. There he was transfigured before them. His clothes became dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them. And there appeared before them Elijah and Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us put up 3 shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. He did not know what to say. They were so frightened. Then a cloud appeared and enveloped them, and a voice came from the cloud, This is my son, whom I love. Listen to him. Suddenly, when they looked around, they no longer saw anyone with them except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus gave them orders not to tell anyone what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. They kept the matter to themselves, discussing what rising from the dead meant. And they asked him, Why do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first? Jesus replied, To be sure, Elijah does come first and restores all things. Why then is it written that the Son of Man must suffer much and be rejected? But I tell you, Elijah has come. And they have done to him everything they wished, just as it is written about him. When they came to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them and the teachers of the law arguing with them. As soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. What are you arguing with him about? He asked. A man in the crowd answered, Teacher, I brought you my son who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him into the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not. Oh, unbelieving generation, Jesus replied, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me. So they brought him. And when the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. He fell to the ground and rolled around foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the boy's father, How long has it been like this? From childhood, he answered, It has often thrown him into the fire or water to kill him, but if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. If you can, said Jesus, everything is possible for him who believes. Immediately, the boy's father exclaimed, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. When Jesus saw that a crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the evil spirit. You deaf and mute spirit, he said, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again. The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said, he's dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet, and he stood up. And after Jesus had gone indoors, his disciples asked him privately, Why couldn't we drive it out? He replied, this kind can only come out by prayer. I certainly pray for the Lord's blessing here and our understanding. There are those in the world who have a very difficult time deciding what to do or how to accept Jesus Christ. The humanist, the secularist of our day, they say that Jesus was a misguided man. The Muslims believe him to be a prophet. The Hindus see him as a very wise man. Our Jehovah Witness friends say that he is God's first creation. Some refer to him as a good teacher. Some refer to him as a good moral teacher, a moralist. And there are many who would rather call him just a liar. Over the last 2 weeks, we have discussed Jesus' own question regarding who he was. He asked, who do the people say I am? Peter responded saying, they say, well, maybe John the Baptist, or maybe even Elijah, or maybe one of the prophets. Clearly, there were many in Jesus' day confused, not clear about who he was. Then Jesus asked Peter specifically, what about you? Who do you say I am? And as we've discussed over the last 2 weeks, Peter did answer correctly. He did confess, you are the Christ. But even Peter did not understand fully who Jesus was. We see this in his rebuke. When Jesus said, I must go and be rejected and be killed, Peter rebuked him and said, Lord, no. So as much as Peter answered correctly about him being the Christ, he didn't understand fully what being the Christ meant. And here today, we see poor Peter again at the center of the conversation, at the center of the story. And it's one of the more amazing stories in all of Scripture. It's the Transfiguration. An amazing sight. An amazing principle at play here. I read again for you. After 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him and led them up a high mountain where they were all alone. There he was transfigured before them. His clothes became dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them. And there appeared before them Elijah and Moses who were talking with Jesus. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what Peter, James, and John saw that day? They'd been hanging out with Jesus maybe a year and a half, almost 2 years, maybe more. And then suddenly before their eyes, he's transfigured into his heavenly being with clothes so white that the only way Mark could describe them, they are bleached out. What a layman's term. They are bleached out much whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them. It would be understandable that those who witnessed such a sight would be overwhelmed. And poor Peter was. Poor Peter was. And his response revealed again that he clearly did not comprehend all that was at play here before him. I mean, Peter, in his excitement and in being frightened, as Mark records, he placed Elijah and Moses on the same level as Christ. He said, let's build a shelter for each of you here on earth. What? These are heavenly beings. They don't need a tent. But poor Peter, rather than being quiet, which should have been, he had to say something. And all of you have been there. Something happens, I've got to say something, and typically it might not be the best thing. But I do feel for Peter. You know, Peter being the leader of the disciples, he gets the brunt of all these stories. But also his personality, his vivacious character, he puts himself in the middle of many of these stories. But poor Peter, last week, Jesus rebuked him, calling him Satan. And here, 6 days later, he's seeing Jesus in all his glory. Can you imagine how the guy slept at night? with all this going on. But it was not only Peter. James and John were there. They saw all of this. And as they were coming down the mountain, they were lacking the understanding. They were somewhat confused. They were going, what does it mean, rising from the dead? What does it mean that Elijah must come first? We know about Elijah. He died 300 or 400 years ago, and now he's got to come back. What is all this about? They too did not understand fully who and what Jesus represented. And then following this, we move into the story of the healing of the boy with an evil spirit. Again, verse 17 and 18 for you. A man in the crowd answered, Teacher, I brought you my son who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not. Now, most believe the thing this gentleman, this young boy was suffering with was epilepsy. And we see the symptoms of that, of an epileptic type seizure. But that is not all. We can't allow the medical prognosis here to be the complete reasoning behind being thrown to the ground, gnashing at teeth, and being deaf and mute. He was possessed by an evil spirit. The disciples asked, why couldn't we drive this out? And Jesus' response is simple. This kind can only come out with prayer. This kind can only come out with prayer. Now, the disciples did not fully comprehend many things in and around this story. They did not understand the relationship they had with the Father through Jesus Christ. They did not understand the ability and the power that was theirs because of that relationship with the Father through Jesus Christ and was brought into fine relief with prayer. I mentioned earlier that the disciples said, Jesus, teach us how to pray. They had not understood this idea of prayer and the intimacy that we gain through prayer with the Father through Jesus Christ. They had much yet to learn about this idea of prayer, the intimacy of a relationship with Jesus Christ, and how that gave them access to the Father and the power that was at their disposal. Prayer is vital to the Christian. I've said that many times in different meetings and forums here lately. Prayer is vital to the Christian. We do have a very intimate, close relationship with God the Father through Jesus Christ. We hear from Him. We come to know Him. We hear His Word through the reading of the Scriptures. And then our conversation back with Him after meditating on these Scriptures comes through prayer. And as I will point out later, we grow through that idea, through that activity of prayer. The disciples had yet to grasp fully that entire relationship of which prayer was such a vital part. There's another individual we've read of here that we need to bring into the discussion of not understanding, of not comprehending fully. And it's the boy's father. The father of the demon-possessed boy. Now, we will acknowledge the gentleman did well bringing his son to the attention of the disciples. He did better by not being satisfied with their inability. He brought the boy to the attention of Jesus Christ. He did well in this. But there's a problem. There's an issue at hand. Look with me at verse 21. Jesus asked the boy's father, how long has he been like this? From childhood, he answered, it has often thrown him into the fire or water to kill him. But if you can, do anything, take pity on us and help us. Three words. If you can. Again, this gentleman did well bringing the boy to the attention of Jesus Christ. But he was just not quite there yet. He acknowledges who Jesus is. He acknowledges the disciples. He acknowledges Jesus Christ. But yet he does not fully understand the power that's standing there in front of him. He does not understand fully Jesus, the Christ of God, and the power of God and the ability of Jesus there in front of him. I would just give this to a lack of knowledge. We don't know how much this man has been taught. There's a group here, the teachers of the law, they're there. But I can't quite say this is one of them that is asking the question. That has to be left open. If you can. If you can. How many of us may not ever say the word, but back there, floating around in our minds when we're faced with an issue, if you can. If, Lord. But notice Jesus' reply. I hope I'm not being irreverent here, but to me this shows Jesus has a sense of humor. Or at least a sarcastic humor. Jesus says, if you can, what do you mean if? What do you mean if? Then he says very simply, everything. Everything is possible for him who believes. Notice that word, believes. Belief. Understanding. Comprehension. Knowledge. We'll get back to that. What was the man's response? What was the man's response? Now, many of you have probably read this text and go, the man said it, I say it, this is me. I do believe, but Lord, help me in my unbelief. Meaning, Jesus, I hear you, I know you, I, but there's still this part of me that just can't quite grasp all of this. The man is saying, I do believe that you are the Christ. But all of these miracle things, they're just so hard to understand and comprehend. And folks, here is the centerpiece of the sermon today, is this prayer offered by the gentleman. I do believe. Lord, help me in my unbelief, because it's there. It's there. As I read through this text, preparing for this sermon, I saw that level or that presence of unbelief at the center of every one of these stories. Unbelief. Misunderstanding. No understanding. Or simply a lack of awareness, a lack of knowledge is at the center of all of these. And all of these can lead to some level of unbelief. And again, I say, isn't this us? Lack of understanding. Misunderstanding. A lack of knowledge. We go over a text and we read it and we read it and we read it and it just, but then one day it goes, oh, wow. Oh, okay, now I got it. And it changes the whole path. This is us. This is us. And all of these can lead to some level of unbelief. So here we have three stories, three situations, three revelations of people and their awareness or lack of awareness of who Jesus really was. First, we had Peter, James, and John, who were witness to this unbelievable sight But their lack of understanding how all of that comes together and who Jesus is caused Peter to act somewhat improperly and caused the other two disciples to ask questions, trying to gain some level of understanding. And then we had the lack of ability on the part of the disciples. They didn't understand the power that was theirs because of Jesus Christ and because of the Father. They didn't understand all that was theirs. And then the boy's father. I will attribute his just to a simple lack of knowledge. He was learning who Jesus was, but he was not there yet. Many of us are there. Each of these is tied to their understanding of just who Jesus was. But more than that, who and what he represented. God the Father and the power that is available to the Christian. And I will go one step further. At the core of each of these stories is the same issue. And it is an issue of faith and its maturity. Not lack of faith. We have a presence of faith, but its maturity. Where is it in its growth? You see, at the center of faith is belief. Do we believe Jesus is who he says he is? Do we believe 100% fully and completely everything that is said here? And we hold no reservations to who and what is said about Jesus or he says about himself in these scriptures. And do we trust him to be what he says he is? Do we trust? Because you see, I believe fully that belief, trust, and faith are all tied together. Belief, trust, and faith. At issue in these stories is the belief of the persons involved in Jesus Christ. And it's just like the man says, I believe, but there's still a level of unbelief. Okay, that's faith and maturity. Where are you in your faith? Where are you in your growth? Are you to the point of trusting entirely? Or when bad things happen, you go, okay, Lord, why me? And you, no. All of this is growing. Belief, trust, and faith. The boy's father prayed. I would love to do that sometime. In times of prayer. You know, I can close my eyes and I can see spiritually before me Jesus standing there. But I would love so much to not have to depend on my faithful eyes and be like this man and look up in Christ's face and say, help me. Help me in my unbelief. The boy's father prayed, help my unbelief. Well, as we walk through this logically, unbelief can be removed, can be tempered, can be adjusted, addressed through knowledge, through education, through understanding, through comprehension. We can learn and our unbelief begins to slip away. But there's a problem here. There are so many things about the Christian faith. There are so many things about God. There are so many things about Christ and the way the Holy Spirit works. There is so much here that we will never understand. And so there's always going to be a level of unbelief if our intent is to understand everything. There's always going to be a handicap. This is where trust comes in. Trust, not in the things, but in the one who is the doer of the things. Not in things, not in the events, but in the person. Many of you remember 2 years ago, I had a total knee replacement. Without getting too graphic, the doctor for this surgery cut my leg, the bone in my leg, completely apart in two places. I asked him to explain how he did that, and he said, "You really don't want to hear it." I said, "Okay." After they cut the bones, on the lower bone and the upper bone, they put two caps. I have the x-ray. They put a cap on each of them. And then they took elastic bands through the knee and around the knee, and they built me a new knee. I got a good new knee. Now, I don't understand that. I don't understand all of what they did. I seen pictures. He explained it to me very briefly. But I don't understand it, how they can take out the real knee and put this one in, and it works great. It works great. But I don't understand all of it. But the reason I went to the doctor to do the knee is because of trust. Dr. Masonis was recommended by the same doctors who put all the Carolina Panthers back together. So, and everybody said, "This is the best guy in the state." And the reason I trust him is that advice, but also because of his medical education, and also because he's done hundreds of them. Mine was not the first, thank God. But here's the point. I don't understand how they did it, but I trust the gentleman who did it. All right, here we have Jesus Christ. We don't understand everything about him, but we're not asked to have faith in the things. We're not asked to trust the things. We're not asked to have belief in the things. We're called on to trust Jesus Christ because he is trustworthy. Why? How is he? Why is he trustworthy? We'll confine our rationale to just these two chapters here that we've discussed the last 3 weeks. He is the Christ, the Son of the living God. He is the Christ of God. We have this testimony here where the Father, this voice in the cloud, "He's my Son. I love him. Listen to him." We have the healings. The little boy was healed from his epilepsy. We have the expulsion of the demon. Just with a word. And in this passage, we have the transfiguration. What the transfiguration is a glimpse into the heavenlies for three men. They saw what Jesus will appear to us one day being. They saw him in his heavenly arraignment. Okay, all this together says, he's God. He's God. Our belief is based in understanding, yes. But as we've said, there's many things we don't understand, true enough. But this I pray we do understand, that Jesus is God. And our faith, our trust, our belief is in that, that he is God. So the question becomes, how does our faith grow? How does our trust in Jesus Christ grow? How does our unbelief diminish? Well, I've just said, but I'll tell you again, look to verse 7. And again, if you're one of those who underlines or highlights the Bible, this is a phrase, a statement I would ask you to underline or draw attention to. It's found in verse 7. It says, "Then a cloud appeared and enveloped them, and a voice came from the cloud. This is my Son, whom I love. Listen to him." Oh, but that's so simple. Surely there's got to be more I got to do. No. Listen. Listen. How does our faith grow? Listen. How does our trust in him grow? Listen. How does our unbelief go away and we come to a firmer foundation in Jesus Christ? We do everything we can to put Jesus Christ at the center of our world, all of our study, all of our praying, all of our yearning to know is not so much in the peripheral things, those are okay, but Christ is at the center. Many times when folks are sitting in my office and we're having discussions about stuff and things and the issues that trouble all of us, I always get back to, tell me about your relationship with Jesus Christ. And more times than not, I find the core of the issue. We've wandered away. We've lost touch. We're not listening. We're not studying. We're not yearning to know who Jesus Christ, the person, the man, God is. Listen. Learn from, study, get to know intimately Jesus Christ. Go with me to Matthew 11:28. Many of you have this passage memorized, I'm sure, once you lay eyes on it. 11:28 and 29. This is Jesus speaking, of course. He says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn. Learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." If you are burdened, if you are challenged, you find some level of unbelief that is really burdening and challenging, leading you to the point of doubt, I pray not to despair, but you are just troubled, then begin your study of Jesus Christ. Begin your earnest investigating, digging, learning, praying to and about knowing Jesus Christ. I have folks who, again, to my office in counseling, they come to me with marital issues. I tell them, your issue is not your marriage. The marriage is a symptom. The issue is your heart and Jesus Christ. Almost always. Almost always. Again, this very popular question, who do you say I am? I hope all of us together can say, we say you are the Christ. I hope we all together can say, you are the Son of the living God. And I hope all of us can say, it is so sweet to trust you. And I pray we do. Amen.